Every day we're told that the world is changing. One day it's about Ukraine, the next Iran, then Taiwan, then Gaza, then trade wars, elections, and financial crisis. But are these separate stories, or are they all interconnected? More importantly, how do you build a way of thinking that lets you understand what's really happening instead of just reacting to headlines? And here to help navigate this follow-on discussion is the Geopolity founder, Adnan. Hope you're well, Adnan.
I'm doing good, Imran. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Very good. Thank you. I want to remind all our avid listeners that you can find us on all the major social media platforms where you can subscribe and never miss anything. So, Adnan, to start the discussion, many people want to understand what's happening in the world, but the sheer volume of information can be quite overwhelming. If someone was starting from scratch today, where would you tell them to begin?
Okay, so the best place to begin is, what should you be looking at? And you're right, there's a lot of things going on in the world, a lot of moving pieces. You could say the world is like a massive jigsaw with so many pieces. They're constantly moving. You're probably going to miss some. Some get more attention than others. What should you be looking at? Well, the first thing you should be looking at is the nations in the world. There are 200 nations in the world. However, not all nations are the same. Some nations are very powerful. Some nations do a lot of things beyond their borders. These key nations, that's who you need to be looking at. So there's only about 5 or 6 nations in the world that are the most powerful. They shape most of what's going on in the world. They are the countries that you need to be watching. You need to understand these countries, and you need to understand their key policies. When you understand their key policies, you are effectively looking at, in one go, 80 to 90% of what's taking place in the world. So to give you some examples, if you want
Before
to...
Before you give the examples, Adnan, what are the 5 countries would you say? You mentioned it at the, you know, in the previous podcast, just to remind everyone, what are the 5 nations that we should be keeping track of?
Yeah, so we drew my Premier League of nations. So we had the US, we had Russia, we had China, we had Britain and France, and then we had Germany as well. The reason why I say you need to follow these 5 countries is because 90% plus of what happens in the world is because of these countries interacting, these countries competing. Now, these countries may change, but whatever era you're in, you will need to identify the most powerful countries in the world, and they're the ones you need to follow, because what they do shapes the world. So if we look at the Ukraine war, you can't understand the Ukraine war unless you're following the US and Russia. Because the Ukraine war really is a battle between the West, led by America, and with Russia. So these are the 2 powerful countries I put in my league table. So if you follow them, you will naturally follow the issues that they're involved in. And one of them is Ukraine. America is the global superpower, and America under Trump is making changes to its global position. And it's having to do this because the empire is just proving too costly. The issues America faces are growing, and it faces competition. So when America makes statements like, we're going to leave NATO, our allies need to pick up the bill. When they start criticizing Europe, we need to monitor this and we need to watch this, because this would impact the world, because America is the superpower. And the final example is, you have to follow China. China is an emerging power. China is rising. So whether it gets to the number one spot, we'll have to wait and see. But because China's rising up the league table, that is a country you need to watch. So this is the place I would say you need to start. And that's quite a lot there. So the nations that are the most powerful, you need to identify them. And any news stories you come across on a daily basis, they you need to pursue, because they're important.
So, you know, every day there are hundreds of headlines, loads of breaking news alerts, you know, every other hour, literally. And in this, you know, so many people with blogs and, you know, opinions online. How do you decide what's genuinely important and what's just noise?
So as I mentioned, the key nations are the ones you need to watch. So what that means is, countries like Finland, countries like South Africa, countries like Mongolia, with all due respect to them, they don't really engage globally. So they're not countries you need to follow. Unless you live in those countries, you know, what's going on and what they do is important to you. But these countries don't really engage in international struggle. They don't really engage in international competition. So, you know, any news you come across these countries, unless you're really interested in that particular news, you don't really need to follow them from that perspective. So even if you're following the most powerful nations, what should you specifically follow? What you need to be following is the political plans they have and the styles and means they use to achieve their goals. So to give you two examples to understand this, the US has identified China as an emerging power. So the US has a plan that it wants to contain China. And that plan, it uses different styles and means to achieve it. So it gives military support to countries around China, like India, like Japan, like South Africa. America has banned the export of semiconductor machines to China in order to contain it. And under Biden and Trump, they've started a trade war with China. So these are all styles to achieve a political plan. The political plan is to contain China. To give you another example, if we look at Russia, Russia believes it's a power. Russia wants to have influence in countries in its former Soviet republics. So the style it uses to achieve that is the relationship it has with China. The Ukraine war is one of the reasons why it went into Ukraine. And Russia uses its energy relations to develop ties with other countries. So you can follow these important countries. What you specifically should be following is their political plans and the styles and means they use. And the good news of all of this is what the daily media reports. Putin's gone to China. The Chinese leader's gone to North Korea. Zelensky's come to Europe. He wants more help. These are the political plans and the styles that are being reported in the daily news. So what you have to do as an analyst is identify what the plans are and what the styles and means they're using. And if you do this regularly, you will see these styles and means constantly change. The political plans sometimes work, sometimes they fail. So America went to war with Iran and it hasn't turned out right. So, you know, will they change the political plan? Will they still try and achieve this plan and use other styles? This is what you specifically need to be following. So anything that doesn't fall into this bracket is potentially just noise. It's actually not very important. And I'm sure we're going to talk about this. Sometimes, you know, noise is used as a political tool. It's to deflect, it's to lie, it's to misdirect. But if you're following the most powerful nations, their political plans and the styles of media, that's what you should be looking at.
No, you mentioned the media, and people often say that the media is biased. Instead of trying to find the perfect news source, you know, what's the best way to consume news if your goal is to understand what's actually happening?
So the important thing here is obviously the news outlets or the media outlets, they put out lots of content. They put out lots of analysis. What you're really interested in is the event that's happened. So for example, you know, Donald Trump, he went to a meeting, he went to the G7 meeting. Okay, who are the countries that are there? What are the key things that come out of it? You're interested in the events that have occurred. What you're not interested in is in the analysis. And this is where the bias comes in, because media outlets, fundamentally, they are companies. They're there to make a profit. So, you know, selling stories that are shocking is how they get clicks, is how their content is absorbed. So they will say things which isn't entirely true, because that's how you get clicks. So to avoid that, what you're interested in is the event. You're interested in what happened, when did it happen, where did it happen, rather than the analysis. We also need to understand the media perspective. You need to understand each media outlet, who's funding it and what their perspective is. Are they on the left? Are they on the right? Are they a pro-global system? Are they pro-West? Are they anti-Islam? You have to understand that, because no one is free of this perspective. Everyone, you know, when these media organizations are created, they're created like that for a reason. The other thing you've got to keep in mind is, look, the media, you know, it's a very broad stroke I'm making now. They are there to misinform. They're not really there to inform you. Most of the media companies there are trying to build a particular perspective. They believe a certain type of war should exist. And that's why they criticize things or undermine things if it's not in line with it. And to give you some examples, only three companies, a mere three companies, own 90% of the UK's newspapers. These three companies own 40% of the online audience. It's a very concentrated media outlet. Just from that, what should become clear, you're getting a very filtered version of global events. And the three companies I'm talking about here, you've got DMG Media, they own the Daily Mail. That's owned by the Lord Rothmore family. So, you know, these guys have an agenda there. You've got News UK, which is Rupert Murdoch. So that's the Sun, the Times. And then you've got Reach PLC, which is the Daily Mirror and Daily Express. Just three companies own 90% of the print media and 40% of the online media. In America, it's even worse. You've got five companies who own all news and entertainment. So, you know, if you look at all the news outlets in America, even the media outlets, you break them down, it's just five companies who own all of it. And social media, I would say in many cases, even worse, just four companies act as gateways where people access news. So you've got Google through Alphabet, you've got Meta, Facebook, you've got X Corp, and then you've got ByteDance, which used to own TikTok. These are just the four companies everyone uses to access information, access news. So you have to be aware of this because you can't just take at face value the content that you read online. Every media organization has their perspective, they have their bias, and you have to be aware of that. Otherwise, you know, you're going to take it as granted what they're saying is the truth. So what we want to know is what action took place. You then make your own opinion. And what you've got to be careful with is a lot of the news are giving you their analysis and their opinion. And that's not what you're interested in. All you're interested in is what happened. And by linking it with other events, you're going to come forward with your own opinion. And I appreciate, you know, this isn't straightforward. I still make many mistakes. I get it wrong. But that's, unfortunately, that's the beast. That's how it is.
I mean, this week, the UK had their seventh prime minister step down. So I want to discuss briefly, you know, leaders and politicians, because they have a massive say. So, you know, often they speak to different audiences, be it domestic voters, allies, rivals, you know, financial markets, foreign leaders. How do you distinguish political messaging from genuine policy?
So when a politician or anyone important makes a statement, it is just a statement. What we now have to observe is what translates into action. So just because someone said something, that really doesn't mean anything, although we should take notice of what they've said. Do they act upon it? Do they not act upon it? So actions over statements, that's really the key thing. Because as your question says, politicians say all sorts of things. You mentioned the UK election. Keir Starmer came in 2 years ago, promised the world. He didn't deliver on any of it. So he didn't live up to any of his statements that he said. And that's why we should always be monitoring what actions these leaders do, irrespective of what they say. Now, they may say things and do it. They may say things and not do it. So what we learn from this is always actions over statements. So let's take a couple of examples. Donald Trump, for the last 3 months, I've calculated, on 36 occasions, he said a deal with Iran is imminent. How can he say that statement 36 times and there's only one deal that came at the end of it? So what that tells us is his statements, the purpose was something else. And I believe what he's doing is, you've got this war he's got involved in, it's not going according to plan. So what he's doing is he's talking to his own domestic audience that, look, you can rely on me, we're about to get a deal. The Iranians are saying there's no talks going on, he's saying we're imminent, the deal's about to come. So that's a good example there of where the actions were completely out of sync with the statement. We hear regularly, if Hamas put their weapons down, the war will be over, right? That's what we hear from Israeli leaders. And clearly, there's something else going on here, because when Hamas didn't exist, the Israelis were doing what they're doing now. When Hamas exists, the Israelis have continued doing what they're doing now. So again, this is it's a propaganda. It's a statement being made. They're never going to follow it through in actions. The Israelis are in the middle of a ceasefire with Iran, with Hezbollah in Lebanon, and in Gaza, but they're still massacring people. So clearly, you know, we can't take the statements seriously. What we do is we look at their actions where they're constantly attacking. And then, for example, a final one is Israel says they just want peace, but the actions say completely opposite. You got leaders, senior leaders in Israel coming out, you know, we're going to stay in Lebanon. We want to go to war with Turkey. We want to go to war with Syria. So the actions are completely opposite to what they're saying. And that's why it's very important. You can't just go by the statements. But what you do is you listen to the statement and then you monitor, does it translate into action? Or if it does, then that means, you know, what they're saying is the truth. Most of the time, I will say a lot of the statements really are to please an audience or to send a message. What we're interested in, the actions they're doing, that's what we need to be monitoring rather than the statement.
Okay. You know, going back to your Champions League table of nations, now, when you're trying to understand countries like China, Russia, US. What are the key questions that you need to ask? You know, what should people be looking at beyond today's headlines?
Right. So three things we need to look at. Each of these nations, we need to look at what's their global outlook, what's their view towards the world, what are their capabilities, and then what are their political plans. And I'll give you some examples of this. The US is now saying the global liberal order, you know, we're ripping it up. You know, we see, you know, international law, Lizzie Graham said it doesn't really apply on us white countries. You know, look at what America's doing to NATO. Look at how Trump treats Europe. The transatlantic relationships are gone. And even we had talk from Trump saying, look, the UN's outlived its use. Why is the US ripping up the global order? Fundamentally, because it doesn't serve it anymore. So America had a global outlook where after World War II, it emerged as a global power and it established the global liberal order as a structure to serve that purpose. That structure now, as far as America's concerned, it doesn't serve it anymore. And the reason why it doesn't serve it is because China doesn't want to join it. So America's thing is when we have this global liberal order, it's very costly. We have to have our military around the world and other countries seem to get a lot out of it when we bear the costs of maintaining it. So if you understand America's global outlook, if you look at her capabilities and her style and her political plans, it doesn't serve it anymore. That's how we can learn what's going on there. If we take another example, is why did Russia invade Ukraine? If you understand Russia's global outlook, as far as Russia's concerned, is they have a monopoly over the former Soviet area. And they believed the Western countries led by America and the European Union, they're encroaching upon Ukraine. And that's why they did it. So by understanding Russia's outlook, you can understand the specific actions that it does. Keep in mind, look, you know, Putin or any leader, they don't just wake up in the morning and do something randomly. Although that is possible. What you find is, you know, they have an outlook.
Some people may argue that Trump does that every day.
Yeah, so even Trump, we've got to keep in mind that he says a lot, he tweets a lot. Yeah. Again, that serves a purpose. You know, it serves a purpose for him. And yes, it's quite unique because remember, Trump's not from a political background. Trump's not even a politician per se. He's a reality TV star. He's a businessman. So he doesn't think like a normal politician. And in fact, he doesn't even do what a politician should do, which is think through your policies. So half the time, what he's trying to do is just tell the American public, I'm great. I've done this. I've done that. I mean, he has a phone call. Then he tweets, I had a great phone call. Like, you don't see Putin doing that. You don't see any other Western leader doing that. So there is method in the madness. I mean, yeah, he makes him look silly. He makes America look silly. But that is the way he does it. The final example I wanted to give is, why is Taiwan important to China? If you look at China's global outlook and its history, there's only one China and the Communist Party rules over it. So how dare there be this territory about 100 miles off mainland China that says it's independent? So you can understand Taiwan and the issue by understanding China's global outlook, by understanding what are their plans to actually unify this. So that's how you make sense of these nations, the global outlook, their capabilities and their political plans. If you understand these three and monitor them and pursue them, that will help you make sense of the nations in the world.
One of the questions that I raised during our last podcast was about history. I feel that we need to retouch on that point again. You know, people often say that history repeats itself. How much does history, you know, how much history do you actually need to understand modern geopolitics? And where should people focus their attention when it comes to the history?
So history is important. However, we do need to put this into perspective. And I'm going to give you an example. If you're buying a car, you could get the whole history of a car. Let's say the car's 10, 15 years old. You go online, you go to the original company, you get the whole history, service history, everything like that. And then based on that, you make a decision. So, you know, you made a well-informed decision. You spend a lot of time, you go into detail. The other way you can buy a car is, you know, you look at the car, you go online, you learn about the basics of this car, you know, you take it for a ride, but you're basing your decision on purely what's in front of you. Yeah, you know, you look at the mileage it's done, you look at its condition, things like that. So the difference between the two is, one is you look at what's in front of you and you know, look at all the basic stuff, how much mileage has it done, what condition it is in, you know, any worn out bits. The other thing is you spend a lot of time looking at how this car's got to where it is now. Now, I wouldn't say one is worse than the other. If you just make a decision in front of you, you're going to make a well-informed one. But if you also look at its history, your understanding will be much deeper, much broader. That's really the difference. So you can look at France, you can look at Britain, you can look at China and Russia and America, and you can look at what they're up to now, which is great. But if you look at their histories, how they evolved, how they become the nation that they are, your understanding will just be much more deeper and much more broader. If you just look at America today, I mean, that's not wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. However, if you look at how America got to where it is now, it will allow you to understand why it does what it does. Why America has a certain type of leader. Why the American people believe in the ideas that they do. So yes, history is important from that perspective, but that doesn't now mean we have to keep reading ancient history. That doesn't mean we've got to go back to the beginning of time. We're talking about the actions that have led to a nation to where it is now. And to give you one example, you can't really understand Europe and the nations unless you understand the history of war. This is a continent where the two world wars happened. This is a continent that has constantly been at war, whether it's religious wars, whether it's wars of conquest, whether it's nationalistic wars. So you have to understand that to understand these nations today. Why did the UK leave the European Union? Well, if you look at history, it actually provides you with a decent answer. So absolutely, from this perspective, history is important. And there are lots of books on history, on events, on countries, on issues that have happened. So I think it is important. It's more to give depth to your understanding, to give broadness. Reading history is definitely a good idea.
But then how do you stop that spiraling of, you know, going down that that rabbit hole? You know, I enjoy reading history way more than I, you know, enjoy reading The Economist, for example, or about, you know, modern politics, because the history is what's happened. I feel I'm learning more in terms of what's happening in the past and, you know, how do we stop making the same mistakes going forward? So the Ottoman Empire, for example, more and more stuff is coming out. It's way more exciting. It's, you know, it's way more fun than reading a biography on Tony Blair, for example. But I understand, you know, I have to stop myself from going down that rabbit hole. What advice would you give about, well, firstly to myself and then to others, about stopping myself and, you know, having that that pause button in the brain?
So, Imran, I wouldn't criticize anyone who reads history. If you read history, you know, you love it, you're engrossed on it, you know, thumbs up. I will never criticize anyone who does that. I would criticize someone who reads no history. I get it. You know, there's so much content out there. And there's some you will always like over others. You know, if you're an economics guy, if you're a geopolitics guy, you're a history guy, and even history, you can break down into regions and eras and all these sort of things. So I'm not going to criticize it. I think, and again, you know, reading is an ongoing thing. It's something to do to the rest of your life. It's something you do until the day you die. So you don't need to get picky of what history. I mean, obviously, you know, if you're reading about something that you're about to write about, then reading the history relevant to that now is probably critical. The Ottoman history is something you're doing on an ongoing basis. So, you know, you don't need to do that right now. At the end of the day, look, we all have a bandwidth. You know, we all have a pressure. So we have to decide that. But some of these things, what are you going to know? This is something you do for the rest of your life. And if you're interested in this, if you're engrossed in it because you enjoy it, that's a really, really good thing. Because, you know, most people struggle to read. Most people don't want to read. So for them, like, it's a hard chore that they have to do. So if you can do something because you're engrossed in it and you enjoy it, you know, that's definitely a thumbs up from me. However, look, what's going on today?
That's a fantastic segue into my next question, because one of the questions I get asked on a regular basis is about reading. And, you know, we're reading about the daily news on whichever media it is, but and I think this is where the segue comes into it. Should people be reading books still? You know, you've got think tank reports, academic research. You know, how do you decide which sources are worth your time and your reading time? And way importantly, and this is a question that I get asked, you know, on a regular basis, is how long should one read?
So how much you should read, there's no time on these things. You read as much as is necessary for you to understand something. I don't think we should put reading down to, you know, an hour a day, you know, keep something else away. It's not like that. the quality of what you're reading and your understanding is more important than the length. If that takes you 5 minutes, great. If that takes you an hour, great. So I don't think we should put it to time. What we should do is read and pursue news regularly. And whatever it takes for you to do that on a regular basis, you should do. So if reading 5 hours a day, you do, but that's just not sustainable, then it's not worth you doing it. What you need to do is read to the level where you can understand things and something you can do regularly. So actually, I would say reading for short periods, but doing it regularly is more important than, you know, reading like at so much length where you can't do it regularly. And what you read, the quality of it and it helping you understand things is more important than the length. If that takes you a while, fine. If that takes you a short period, fine. I do find, look, the more you read and the more wider you're read, what you find is what you read today helps you understand what happens tomorrow. What you read today and tomorrow will help you understand what happens 3 days from now. So over a couple of weeks, what you find is how much reading you do will reduce because you've got so much previous information that helps you understand it. So in many ways, making sure you read regularly, making sure the amount of time you spend is something you can sustain is more important than the actual length of time.
Social media, other than as a, you know, has become a massive way or massive manner in which people are consuming news at the moment. Is social media helping people understand the world, or is it making it actually harder for people to understand the world?
So I think in the modern day, I don't think you've got a choice. You're going to have to follow social media. The news medium has changed now with the internet. You know, before you had these large media companies and they provided news, you know, on national television channels, then these went onto cable, then they went to satellite. The way people consume news now is fundamentally changed. You know, you had massive organizations and people consume their content. What social media has allowed is an individual can put content online and I can consume it. So I think in the modern day, you've got no choice. You're going to have to follow social media, but we've got to keep something in mind. Social media is primarily for entertainment and social interaction. It is not really for sharing news, although a lot of people get it on there. It is primarily for entertainment purposes and for social interaction. However, there are some benefits for consuming news. Firstly, social media allows journalists and people to report on the ground. So when the Iran war was going on, when the demos were going on in Iran, there were people on the ground reporting. So, you know, before you had a journalist, he'd have to go over to that country. What angle is he giving? There was all these issues. Today, now, with social media, a guy can go to Syria, they can go to Taiwan, they can go to North Korea, and they can report what they're seeing on the ground. So that's a good thing for social media. This is why, for example, when the protests were going in Iran, Iran had to shut the internet down. That just shows you how important the internet and social media has become now. People can share on the ground. You know, in Israel, they're not allowed to report attacks against Israel on the ground, because they don't want the Israelis to think that things are really, really bad because they might end up leaving the country. So they've passed legislation that you can't report these sort of things. So, you know, all the missiles and the drones that were dropping on Tel Aviv, we could see it from outside, but inside Israel, there's very limited reporting. So that indicates to you how important it is. So that shows you how important social media has become. But keep in mind, look, you know, individuals are reporting these news. They could be lying. They could be glamorizing, they could be underreported. So you've got to keep that in mind. So I would say, you know, amongst the reading you do, it's worth following social media. Again, we're interested in the actions. And when you put that together with other actions, that will put you in a better place to, you know, to decide or to do analysis.
So Adnan, what about, you know, think tank reports and academic research?
So think tank reports are definitely worth reading because they provide insights and details. You're following the news online, you're reading the print media, you know, what you get is some level of analysis. What think tank reports do is they give further insights and they provide details that maybe not, aren't available to you at any given time. However, look, we need to know the reason why a think tank exists and who funds it. This is really important because, you know, think tanks are not some independent organizations. You have think tanks that are directly linked to political parties. You have think tanks who have a particular leaning. So you do have to be aware of that. So if you look at all the right-wing think tanks in America, you know, the Heritage Foundation, you know, they're all very pro-war, very pro the American empire. So they present things in a very filtered way. But independent think tanks, I think their reports are worth reading because they provide insights, they provide statistics, and they provide perspective, which is really useful. So, you know, over the years, I've found a few think tanks and their reports really useful. In Australia, you have a think tank called the Australia Strategic Policy Institute, and they have what's called a technology tracker. So every year, they track the next generation of technologies and who's doing the most research and most innovation in them. And their conclusion for the last few years is 20 years ago, America dominated all the next frontier technologies. Now it's actually China. So that was a really useful insight. They go into a lot of depth. They've got experts on it. That's just not something you would find on the news because the market for this sort of content is very niche. If you're a policymaker, if you are a government official or academic, only you'll be interested in this. So that's what think tanks do. They go to a level of depth that you're not going to get in the newspapers or online because that's not what the majority of people want. But if you're pursuing the news and you want to be more aware, you should be watching this. The RAND Institute, it began from the US Air Force. They do a lot of reports into all sorts of topics. The only thing with RAND you've got to keep in mind is they generally do believe America plays a good role in the world. The American order is a good thing for the world, but some of their research into China, China's technology, China's military, all of the different aspects that make a nation strong, they do a lot of research, they gather all the information, and it's all there in one report for you. So they're definitely worth following. Many years ago, I read a report called Remaking America's Security. It's from this think tank called Alliance of American Manufacturing. So quite a unique think tank. Is there to protect the manufacturing sector in America. And I think about 2013, they did a report where they looked at America's military, the military equipment they make, where is it manufactured, and what are the key materials and minerals America depends upon, and where do these minerals come from? And they concluded back in 2013 that there's some key rare earth elements America relies on China. Now, why this report was useful for me if they did all the hard work, what does America rely on? What are the key minerals they rely on? And what's interesting, this was 2013. 10 years later, China's dominance over rare earth elements, America's dependency has now become public knowledge. These guys were saying it back in 2013. So this is a good example of how think tanks can actually be really, really useful. And the final one is Marco Rubio, who's now the Secretary of State. In 2019, his office... he's been a senator, obviously, longer. His office wrote a report that looked at China's development and China's tech strategy and what America's got to know. And the report was a really good insight into China's industry, where it is and how that threatens America and what America needs to do. So again, you know, Marco Rubio, this was at a time where Marco Rubio was more about how to protect American industry. So for these reasons, think tank reports are really useful. They do a lot of the hard work, legwork, which you won't be able to do, which won't be available in the day-to-day media. So definitely, I think these are worth pursuing. And these should be like one aspect of, your analysis.
What about in terms of reading books? What type of books should be read?
Right, so you should be reading books because they provide depth and they broaden your horizon. That's why you should do it. So this is alongside pursuing the news and the daily events that happen. And there are a multitude of books out there on different subjects with people with expertise, which will give you so much more depth. I'll give you a couple of names. You've got Trita Parsi, the Swedish-Iranian expert on Iran-American relations. He did his PhD on Iran-American relations. He went to Israel. He went to America. He's quite popular at the moment, but he's been criticizing what America's policy is towards Iran. But he's done some great work. He's written books on Iran-American relations. Ilan Pappe, the Israeli, he's done a lot of books on Israel's evolution, Israel's history, giving a really good insight onto what Israel's really been up to. John Mersheimer is really famous. He's famous for writing that book on the influence of the Zionist pro-Israeli lobby. He's obviously quite popular at the moment because of the Iran-America tensions. Professor Richard Warner is really good on money, on finance, central banking, and the influence it plays. So this shows you there's so much books out there by academics, by researchers. There's analysis, there's books on history, books on trends. These are all really, really important because they give you more depth, they broaden your horizons. We recently reviewed... John Mersheimer's book on the influence of the Israeli lobby. And, you know, in that booklet, which is what, the early 2000s, they go into a lot of depth of the influence, the different aspects of the pro-Israeli lobby in America. You're just not going to get that from daily analysis. That's not what the daily news is about. So that's why, you know, you do need to read further. You need to read further literature because it goes into a lot more detail. I just have to say, look, there's no shortcut to knowledge, unfortunately. You have to put in the effort. You're going to have to read. And it takes time. You know, not everything is inspiring, but what you find is that, you know, the more you read, the more information you have, and that will help you understand things. And to give you an example, the Europeans all believe in the same ideology. They all believe in liberal values, but they're different. Now, the only way you can make sense of that is you need to understand their histories, how these nations evolved, what occurred, and that allows you to understand that the Brits, the French, and the Germans, they all believe in the same ideology, but they're very different. Israel and its role in the world. There's so much research and work being done about Israel, what it's doing, why the Westerns support it. In today's day and age, I'll just end with, it's the age of podcasts. There's so many experts. They're online. They're giving their views. They're being interviewed. All of the guys I mentioned, they're regularly on podcasts. So in today's era, you don't even necessarily need to read. You can listen to an audio. You can watch a podcast. So we do live in an era where a lot of this has been made easy for you. It's available at a click. You don't need to go to a library. You don't need to order really, really expensive books. So definitely reading will help you in getting depth and broadening your horizons.
Well, political coverage, Adnan, you know, it often focuses on personalities and the elections. How much influence do individual leaders actually have compared with the, you know, the institutions and systems around them?
You know, individual leaders, their personalities and elections, they've really been built up as something you've got to follow. They're really important things. But the reality here is no leader's in power permanently. They have terms. And once they're gone, they're gone. Nobody today talks about Obama, about Biden or Bush because they're gone. They're no longer in power anymore. What's the point of following them when they don't really have a say on things? The problem with following leaders is it makes your politics and it makes your analysis very personality driven. And I would say, personalities matter less in the long haul of analysis. In the long term of geopolitics, you'll find individual personalities matter very little. What really matters are the elites because they remain as elites. The elites don't change. They don't have elections. They have capital. They have wealth. They have resources. They are way more influential and have more say over a nation than the political leaders do. You've got to also keep in mind that elections, I would say, they're the spectacles of today. In the past, you know, you had spectacles, you know, in Rome, you had these massive shows of display. There were spectacles. Elections are the spectacles of today. It makes people think that they have a say. And what's interesting is we're going to have 7 leaders in the UK in a decade. So that should show you how little leaders and how little elections actually matter. The fact that so many leaders constantly change. You have to understand that, you know, over the long run, politics, geopolitics, they based on some fixed goalposts. And what that means is individuals, their personalities, they actually matter very little over the long run. In the short run, that's what gets reported. That's what gets clicks. However, in the long run, they have very little say. America, no matter who would have been leader today in America, he would have had to have dealt with where the American empire is. America is now, what, just weeks away from its 250th anniversary. The American empire is not looking good. It's not looking strong. They've got an emerging power. Whoever would have become the leader would have had to deal with this. So Trump became the leader and he's dealing with it in his way. And that's the only place where the leader gets a say. When someone becomes the leader, he decides or she decides what resources will be used, what the priorities should be. But the actual issues, the underlying issues, they don't change. So even if Hillary Clinton had won, even if Donald Trump had lost and Kamala Harris had won, where America is and what needs to be dealt with doesn't change because that is there irrelevant to who the leader is. So the point I'm trying to make is leaders actually matter a lot less than they're made out to be. Elections actually matter a lot less than they're made out to be. However, they are the spectacles of today. They get a lot of clicks. They get a lot of coverage. To give you an example, elections, you could argue, a bit like a bus. The people sitting on a bus, they have a vote and they decide who the driver should be. They drive for about 20 miles and they decide, we don't like this driver. He's not driving fast enough. They have a vote. We're going to change the driver. Voting for a leader in election is like that. You change the bus driver. However, you don't change the bus. When you have elections, you are not voting for the institutions. You're not deciding what the foreign policy should be. You are literally deciding who should be the caretaker over the state. And the bus is the system and the driver is the particular leader that you're voting for. So really, you know, elections don't change much. Individual leaders don't really have that much of a say. However, this is how it's presented today. The way elections and leaders are presented, they've become like the be-all end-all. Look, Trump will go. Nobody talks about George W. Bush today. I grew up in the Bush era. He took the country, the whole world into wars, disastrous wars. No one talks about him today. Donald Trump might be loud today. He may be arrogant today. He may be very entertaining. In 10, 15 years' time, he will just be another dot in history. And, you know, I think that's important to understand that.
So, Adnan, why are the following important? Demographics.
So demographics helps you understand the long-term direction a country is going in. You know, the number of people you have, whether they're growing or shrinking, affects everything. How much taxes the government can collect, how many people can go into the military, how many can the current workforce provide the pensions for people who are old. So demographics and understanding for each country is really good to understand the long-term direction of a nation.
Economics.
So whatever grand plans you have, whatever your global agenda is, unless you've got the wealth for it, unless you've got the industry for it, unless you've got the resources for it, you won't be able to achieve it. So understanding economics, understanding the economy of each nation helps you to understand the short, medium, and long term of a nation.
Military.
So military helps you with the long run. In a way, a good way to rule the military is, does a nation have the capabilities to do what it's saying? So America wants to be a global power. It needs a global military in order to achieve it. The UK has grand global ambitions, but it doesn't have the military to achieve it. So the military, in a way, is a good way to understand, does the nation have the capabilities to achieve what it says it wants to?
Energy.
In modern industrial nations, you need energy for electricity, for fuel as transport, to really operate. So you do need to understand the energy situation of a nation to understand what they can and what they can't do.
Finally, geography.
So geography helps you to understand the long-term and strategic direction. Poland, Ukraine are in between major world powers. Their countries have been crisscrossed because of previous wars. So this helps you understand the imperatives and the long-term survival of a nation. So geography is really important to understand, like, the future direction of a nation.
Okay. Adnan, where would you say the real, you know, real power lays? You know, should I be watching what the government does or what the elites do? What about the hidden hands? You know, should I be, or should we be watching them?
So power doesn't really lay where we're told. We're told it's with the politicians. We're told it's with the political parties. I think everyone's agreed that is not where power lays. And what that tells us is the elites in the nation, they're really important. They're not elected. They're very powerful. They're always there and they're not necessarily in the public eye. The government's job really is to execute the strategic direction, which largely comes from them. So we do need to be, so, you know, I've been saying a lot today and the previous podcast, you know, it's about the nations, it's about their political plans, it's about the strategic direction. That actually on its own doesn't come from the government. It doesn't even come from the civil service. It comes from a class of people who have got a lot of wealth, who are very influential. And we do need to be aware of their agenda alongside, you know, the history of a nation, the evolution of a nation. And sometimes this is where you hear the term like the hidden hand. And our next podcast, we can actually talk about these guys. We can talk about the hidden hands and all the conspiracies we have out there. The important thing with these people is what's their agenda? You have the nation's agenda. You have what the politicians say. What is their agenda? Their agenda may be in line with the government or it may be completely opposite. So we do need to be aware of this. And in the next podcast, we can actually break this down. What does it mean and what should we be looking at?
Today, we've spent, you know, today's podcast, this conversation, building a framework for analysing the world. Now, let's put it into practice now. You know, I've got a list of issues for you. How should someone navigate these in order to understand them? So the first one is the greater Israeli agenda.
Okay, so to understand the Great Israeli Agenda, you've got to understand the evolution of the Zionist entity. Look at the statements of the founders. Look at the plan of the founders. You also have to look at all the nations that helped Israel come into existence and have supported since then. So America, Britain, and the West. The good thing with the Great Israel Agenda is the Zionists are not hiding what they want to do. They're actually very open of what their agenda is. So actually just read their statements and you can look at their actions, they're doing it. So you need to understand it. You just need to understand the advocates of this, what they're saying.
The Ukraine war?
So to understand the Ukraine war, you need to understand Russia's view of Europe and Europe's view of Russia. If you understand them, you know that both have been trying to push the border of their respective regions each way, and Ukraine unfortunately gets caught in the middle. That should allow you to understand 99% of what's going on, and actually America doesn't contradict it or change that. So Europe's view of their border with Russia, Russia's view of their border with Europe, you understand that, you can understand the Ukraine war.
How about North Korea, the North Korea issue?
So North Korea issue, you really just got to understand the Chinese-American relationship. If you understand that, you will see that North Korea is just really one bit of that.
Arctic competition?
So the Arctic competition, you're going to look at a bit of history. The Arctic obviously is only a region now coming into the political sphere. In the past, you know, it was frozen. There was no way to get around it. So what you're going to look at is the nations that surround the Arctic. I think it's about seven nations. You've got to look at them and their view towards this region. And what you'll find is the trade routes and energy is the key thing. The good thing with the Arctic is I think there's an organization that regulates the relationship between the different countries. If you read why they came into existence and what they're trying to do, you'll get your answer what the Arctic's all about.
Quantum computing.
So this you need to understand really about technology, the role technology plays in great power competition. And if you look at China and America and what they're doing with this technology, you'll get a good insight what's going on. So the technology tracker that the Australian Strategic Policy Institute does is a bit of a good insight, although that's a technical explanation. But if you just read, every power in history was always at the cutting edge of technology development. If you read about that, you'll understand quantum computing and the role it plays. If you want to understand the technical bits, there's plenty of information out there by think tanks, and even other outlets online who talk about it. So you've got the technology on its own, and then you've got great power competition. They're the two things you've got to read about to understand this.
Why the UK will have seven prime ministers in a decade?
So you really just need to understand the internal politics of the UK. So you had two parties that dominated the political landscape for 100 years. You had Brexit. And then you've got these rebel parties. If you understand that, that'll give you a good insight on why this is going on.
Gulf nations?
So to understand the Gulf nations, you need to understand a little bit of how these nations come about, their leaders and the competition they had. But really, you need to understand the evolution of this region when the Europeans came over. The Brits needed to get from the UK to India. So the Middle East became the area they used to go through, and they've been involved in this region since then. So America's now taken over that region. So you need to understand the region's place in the world. You need to understand how Britain carved up the region. And then you need to understand how America views this particular region. That will give you a good insight into the Gulf nations.
The next one's an interesting one. Is Erdogan a American agent?
So you need to understand America's relationship with Turkey. You need to understand America's relationship with the different players in Turkey over the decades. And you then need to look at all the political actions, the key ones actually, Erdogan's been involved in. And you need to look at what is America's agenda in these particular areas as well. If they marry up, that means one thing. If they don't marry up, that means something completely different.
Space?
So there's a tricky one because space isn't Earth. It's not a region. Nation states is an earthly thing. I think with space, a good way to do this is have a look at the competition that happened with the Soviet Union and America. Why did they go into space? What were they trying to achieve? Once the Soviet Union collapsed, the reality of space changed. Now there's a lot more material. Elon Musk is talking about permanently setting up on the moon. this talk of deep space travel. And now you've got the emergence of China as well, who's talking about utilizing space for a lot of things. So this one's a bit unique. You do need to understand a couple of nations, America, Soviet Union, China. But you also need to understand technology and resources and how space plays a role in that.
And last but not least, Donald Trump.
So I don't know with this one. Donald Trump, where do you begin? He sometimes says what he means. He sometimes says the complete opposite to what he means. Probably the best thing with Donald Trump is, you know, what is he saying and what is he doing? That's probably what I can say, because this guy says a lot. I mean, he can't keep his mouth shut, really, can he? So really, you know, I think 90% of what he says never gets translated into action. So really, I think with him is, what did he physically do over what he's actually saying? You know, I mentioned leaders aren't really important in the grand scheme of things. What leaders can do is colour their particular era. So God knows how Donald Trump's going to be looked back at in the future. But I think with Donald Trump, the lesson we've definitely learned is you can't just take him at face value. This guy, I sometimes wonder, does he even realise half the time what he's saying? Because, you know, he's just lying, he's blagging, you know, he's talking to a particular audience. But I think from a geopolitical perspective, really what's important is what he said that gets translated into action. If it doesn't, then it's not very important.
Dhanan, as always, thank you for your time today. To our listeners, if you want to learn more about the issues raised today, please check out our website, www.thegeopolity.com, all one word. You can also learn more about the issues by accessing our website, where you will find comprehensive insights, analysis, articles, and deep dives. I'm Imran. Thank you for listening.